everybody. This is episode 91 of Radio Free Nintendo. We are back with a slightly modified gang on this very lovely St. Patrick's Day week. We're recording it on the day, but you'll hear it later in the week, and by then you'll probably have sobered up enough to understand what we're saying. But as it is, we may not have sobered up enough to know what we're saying as we say it. And I'm speaking in twists now. We have, as usual, Greg Lay from the UK.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody.
Not Irish, but damn close.
Well, yeah, I'm a few generations removed Irish, actually. Nice. But it's actually not technically St. Patrick's Day anymore over here as we record this.
Oh, that's too bad.
So I had to sober
up. I'm actually several generations removed from being English.
Nice. Well, there you go.
Yes. So, but since you used to be Irish and I used to be English, we're actually not that much alike.
No. Sworn enemies.
All right. Yeah, we also have a somewhat distorted John Lindemann today.
Hey, what's going on? Listen to the voice. I'm a little bit stuffed up, so just bear with me here.
I think it's exciting.
I think it's sexy.
I think it's a trendy new style that you're setting, you trendsetter.
Hey. I'm always on the cutting edge.
Yeah. Pulling those Lindys. And unfortunately, James Jones couldn't be here this week. He's out of town, but I'm sure he'll be back next week. And as a substitute, we've brought in Mike Gammon.
Hey, what's up? More like Mike cheat stick, am I right?
Yeah, cheat stick, yeah. No, Mike is the previews editor for the site, and he does all of our shipping and a lot of other crazy stuff. And you may know him from the forums where we hired him from as Pale Zero.
It's just Pal right now. I cut off the nerdy zero. So.
Oh, okay. It's just Pale. Now it's just the nerdy Pale.
Yeah.
But do you want to explain that name?
No.
That's what I figured.
We're going to go with no on that.
Yeah. So did anybody do anything interesting on this lovely St. Patrick's Day?
Sober as a judge. Yeah. Ooh, that's all I've got to say about it.
I slept. Okay. I slept, man. I slept and felt sick and went to work, and that was about it.
I had a wonderful Belgian beer, because you know that makes sense.
The synergy.
Well, I'm jealous. I love Belgians. I went out for lunch and had an Irish breakfast at the local Irish pub, which was jam-packed. Had a gigantic Irish breakfast. And also had a Guinness and a harp. And then I went back to school and almost fell asleep at my computer. I think I was having, carb overload syndrome. I was damn near comatose for about 3 hours, and I got hardly anything done. But that's normal for a Monday afternoon. So, wow. Exciting St. Patrick's Day stories.
Yeah.
All right, then. Let's move into new business and Pale has a couple of interesting games to talk about.
Well, to start out, I got the American review copy of Smash, so I've been playing it for a little bit longer than everybody else, except for Wendy, of course. But
are you actually reviewing it?
I think so. I've been throwing around a lot of ideas for doing something a little differently because Wendy's was so long and touching on everything. But I'm still trying to work on something. I want to do more of a fanboy version where I touch on the tiny, tiny, minute details. But I don't know. I keep going back and forth with that game. I played it in the beginning and I thought it was too different. And then later on I thought, oh, it's so close to Melee, I'm still going to love it. And then smaller and smaller things keep pissing me off about it. But I mean, it's still a great game. Did you guys know that you can't, if you create stages and you store them on your SD card, and then you play random stage selection, they never get picked. I think that's totally lame.
That's really stupid.
Why don't? What do you mean they don't get picked? They do if they're on your Wii, right?
Right. I did this long test with 300% bunny ears, high gravity, level 9 computer guys, and I ran through it had to have been 70 or 80 matches, and I saw all three of the sample stages, but none of my 20 that were on my SD card. So.
Wow.
Well, it's kind of predictable from the point of view that Nintendo have been quite consistent with requiring you to actually move things over to do anything with them, hasn't it? yeah. rather than actually.
Well, at least you can do it within the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I can bitch and moan about the SD card usage in Brawl, but it's better than anything else on the system. So.
I think that's why I got so upset, because I'm like, oh wow, it's so perfect, and then it wasn't quite as perfect as I was hoping.
Yeah. So have you been? I haven't played you online, but I mean, I assume that you've been playing people online and checking that out too.
Yeah, I mean, just this past Saturday we were playing, and I was playing against Uncle Bob from the forums, and then one of my friends. And Uncle Bob's down in Illinois. I'm in upstate New York, and my friend's in Philadelphia. We had all right matches, but then Bloodworth from LA joined.
And
I swear to God, like, we played an entire match on Icicle Mountain, and it had to have been topping out at about 2 frames per second.
Good.
Yeah. I can't believe everybody sat through it. But.
Yeah.
The lag definitely gets worse as more people join. I think if you're playing one-on-one, you can play over a pretty long distance without any problems, but if you have a 4-player match and people are more scattered, it's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, it still doesn't make sense to me. They have to figure that out. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it should be that difficult. When
I don't think there should be any lag at all. Like, I'm really surprised to see any lag, period.
Who is the speaking?
John.
John's evil twin, stuffed up John.
It's a little hard to tell. You sound like you're 15 years old,
John. I have no energy to really make a rebuttal to that remark, Johnny.
I don't even think I was born when you were 15. So, what else you been playing, Pale?
Well, the other game I'm doing for review that I just picked up was the new Crystal Chronicles for DS. And we had a lot of back and forth on that, just talking about whether or not we needed to test the multiplayer. And I finally decided that I was going to go out and rent a copy to test the multiplayer. But to be honest, I dove into the single player, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised in some ways. Yet it's disgustingly predictable in other ways. But to say the good things first, it was just the story is like actually drawing on the Crystal Chronicles name. I don't know. It's interesting enough, and they use a lot of cool armor and stuff from old Final Fantasy games. It has me quite excited about, the Wii version and stuff like that, and them actually being able to make it a real series.
Yeah, you're talking about Crystal Bearers, though, not the WiiWare Life is a King thing. I think that's very tangentially related to either to Crystal Chronicles, much less to Final Fantasy. But yeah, there is an actual Wii disc-based game also that they announced a long time ago. They showed like a 5-second trailer 2 years ago, and then nothing.
But yeah, the downside of the DS game, I mean, when the GameCube game came out, everybody was like, why in single player can't I get, computer-controlled people to come with me? Well, like, the story mode in this, they kind of got halfway there. You have 3 party members, but the AI is just absolutely terrible. Like, they'll just fall off into water repeatedly, and every time they fall off, they lose like 20 hit points. And sometimes they'll just run into spiky things and kill themselves. And literally the only thing that they may do on their own is sometimes take a swipe at an enemy, and there's no way to like make your magic user cast magic and all that stuff. So you're constantly like switching control, because you can just change who you're controlling at any point of your party. So you're constantly like switching over to the magic user, having him cast a spell, switching back to your tank, having him attack. So it's kind of like halfway there. In some ways, I'm pleasantly surprised, and I think that's kind of a bad thing because I expected so little. But it's interesting. And there's voice acting in a lot of the cutscenes, which is kind of interesting for a DS game. So it's interesting. There's some major flaws, but it seems like they're kind of on the right path to at least make me kind of excited about the series. So.
Does it have more of a real story than the GameCube Crystal Chronicles did?
Yeah, definitely. Like this one, the whole thing starts out with these two little twins, and they have magic powers, but only when they're next to each other. And then their dad gets killed. And I mean, it's kind of your stereotypical fantasy story, but it's definitely a lot farther along than Crystal Chronicles GameCube was.
And is there a bucket?
No bucket.
So there's nothing mechanically that's like keeping the people in your party together,
no,
like forcing them to stay close to each other.
No, I haven't really dove into the multiplayer yet to know how that will work. But the single player, the AI guys will just eventually stop if they can't cross the path or if they can't jump up one step because they do stupid things like that. And then they'll be like way far away, which I thought was really ridiculous as I began playing because then I had to go back and control each one to get them to come. But I found out later that they threw in this special summon button. And if you click L, it makes everybody teleport next to you again.
Ooh, so that's nice.
Yeah, you use that constantly. But yeah. It's interesting. I'm having fun, though. I thought I was going to throw away play the single player for a couple hours and then be able to know enough about it. But it's definitely deep enough that I want to keep going on it. So.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm not really surprised about the AI problems. I'm surprised there is any AI. I'm surprised they even put that in. That's good. But I was just thinking that I can't really think of a lot of Japanese games that have really good artificial intelligence, except maybe Smash Brothers. And I don't know, I guess you could kind of argue for fighting games in general, but I think most fighting games are simple enough that it's not so much the intelligence, it's the pure reaction time advantage that the computer has.
See, I think part of my problem is that I relatively just recently got done finally finishing Final Fantasy XII, and the Gambit system, you're basically programming your own AI. So
yeah, because the characters in that game are pretty stupid too.
Yeah, and it would be nice to at least have something along those lines so I could tell my guys to cure me when I'm not controlling them, but it doesn't even go that far.
Okay, cool. Well, I've really been curious about that game, so I appreciate the update. So did you manage to find a copy for multiplayer?
I saw one in a store, but I have not picked it up yet because I wanted to be done with the single player before I did it. So I will go out.
Yeah,
and
really. Yeah, apparently the issue with that is frame rate. That's what I was reading.
Well, frame rate.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
The multiplayer mode is interesting too because you can play multiplayer in single player. It's really weird. So, the multiplayer mode is closer to, the weird mission base that the GameCube version had, and you can actually play that in single player or multiplayer with multiple cards and wireless and all that. So, I've done that a little bit. I just haven't tried out having actually two people yet, so I will get on that.
Okay, cool. So, what you're saying is the multiplayer part is separate from the single player story.
Right.
But it's set in that mission style, and you can actually play that by yourself if you want to.
Correct, yeah.
So for in terms of single player, it's almost two games in one.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay. Cool. All right, then. I believe Lindemann is next on the new business order.
New business for me. I'm still pretty much playing the same games I was last time, although I did finally get Brawl. I'm still playing Spiderwick Chronicles for DS, which is consistently amusing for me because that game is not only much better than I thought, it's also a lot harder than I anticipated. It's kind of like, it's like Secret of Mana a little bit, but it's pretty hard. I mean, your characters get killed regularly, and I think your party tops out at four people, and right now I have two people, like two kids, and they just get beat up left, right, and center because they just keep throwing monsters at you, and it's pretty tough. So I'm playing that, and Brawl is, of course, entertaining me. the one thing I will say about Brawl, I mean, it's been beaten to death, but that game, what I like about it is the fact that all it does is entertain you. It doesn't try to be some cutting-edge interactive experience. It's just a very fun game. So that's pretty much it. I'm just trying to get through Spiderwick and, hitting some Brawl on the in-between time.
Cool. Okay, Greg, you're up.
Well, first of all, let me get the formalities out of the way. This is week two of Brawl Bitch, as in weeks without a release date since it was released in America.
The fast continues.
Yeah, the fast, which is me reading a few words. my greed cannot be defeated by Nintendo's indifferent attitude towards this continent. But I, however, will not, in fact, be holding out with my European brethren because the reports have come in that the new the Wii Freeloader is working, essentially, with Brawl and with pretty much every other game that's been released to date, by all accounts. So I've got one of those in my possession currently, and my North American copy of Brawl is on the way. With any luck, I'll be playing it by this week. Yes. So what? It is exciting because I could have resigned myself to waiting for several months, and now I can have it within the week. But of course, there's balanced by certain risks that are posed in terms of, you know, at what point is Nintendo just going to kind of switch it off with a firmware update or something, or, you know, there's a few risks there that could happen, and then you're left with a raw copy that does nothing. But, you know, for a game that I've been looking forward to for so long, and, you know, under the circumstances, I should at least be able to get a few months in maybe before maybe it does come out over here, and I'll just buy a copy again. I mean, it's one game I would actually be willing to buy twice, essentially. So
I bought Melee twice because my first copy got stolen.
Oh, really? Yeah. I used the original Melee so much I probably could have just used with two copies for, like, when I was travelling between, like, home and university and stuff. So it could come in handy one day having two copies of the game. But, I mean, it does look like it's a go for now, but it's just a case of whether you're going to be faced with a circumstance in the future where, you know, if you don't download a firmware update, you won't be able to do things like, you know, purchase from the Wii Shop channel. But if you do, if you do download it, well, it depends how hardball they want to be with it, I guess, Nintendo. But
yeah. The more likely scenario is you won't be able to play new games like, say, Mario Kart, because it has a firmware update.
Yeah, see, what I have gathered from the reports on the internet is that essentially what happens is that it has some way of compensating for that, in that, because Brawl requires an update to play. So if you try and boot, with the freeloader Brawl, like, say, you would boot in a sort of a game that doesn't have an update required, like No More Heroes or something like that, it won't play. But it does have an alternative boot method, which what it does is it allows it to update, but it somehow screens it so that it won't complete. It's sort of limited in its effect, so that it allows it to play, but it doesn't completely change your firmware or something. And that's how people have gotten Brawl to work. So it's essentially like a safe boot in terms of, and they recommend doing it for new, like, PAL games as well. In my case, for instance, like, say, for instance, if you get Mario Kart, and if you just put that in, install the new update, that might get rid of your, you know, the freeloader compatibility right there. But if you do the same thing for that you do for Brawl, where you kind of selectively install the update, then actually you might be able to avoid that eventuality. So there's some hope that it won't be rendered completely useless in the very near future, but anybody that would be doing this would have to acknowledge the very strong possibility that there's going to come a day where it becomes useless.
Yeah, and it also might make your Wii explode.
Who knows? You know,
that's what Nintendo would have. Yeah,
who knows? They might just detonate it or something. And of course, the other.
You know, I hope.
I was just going to say the other.
Well,
threat.
Let me say real quick. Sure. I hope that eventually, Daytel gets the freeloader to the state where they'll be able to basically, like, send you hot fixes or updates for it. Online.
Yeah.
So that you could buy the disc, and then essentially if Nintendo, in other words, it would create this ongoing battle between the platform holder and Daytel as far as who can update quicker and who can outdo the other. But I have a feeling that Nintendo won't really care as long as it doesn't open up piracy exploits.
Yes, well, I mean, it certainly doesn't, as far as I know. I mean, because obviously it's not modding, it's just a disc. It's a GameCube disc, actually, the size of it, and you just put it in and take it out after a few seconds, and then, you know, you can bypass the region code. But it doesn't. And in fact, I've actually heard that the disc, ironically, does not work on modded consoles. Now, I guess you wouldn't need it on a modded console, but for the record, I have heard that. So no, there's nothing like that. But apparently they did block the GameCube freeloader somehow. Now, I don't know whether that was collateral damage with them doing something else with the firmware, and that wasn't actually the original intent, was simply to stop GameCube freeloaders from working. But that did happen.
Yeah, because originally the GameCube freeloader worked.
Yes,
yeah,
that is what I heard.
So I guess they've updated it out of compatibility. That's too bad.
Yeah,
so,
and whether that was a totally calculated thing or whether it was a side effect or what, it's not. I don't think it's completely known, but I'm not really up on that, especially. So hopefully it will be alright. But for me, I'm just such a Brawl hat fan without having played the game that I just I have to get in on it as soon as possible. So yeah, I was willing to take the chance on the freeloader to play Brawl early because I've been looking forward to that for the longest time. But during the interminable, though unexpectedly short wait for Brawl that I'm now going through, I've been playing a few things. First of all, I've been playing a bit of WarioWare, Smooth Moves. I rented that out. Which
is the first time you played.
Yeah, it is. I just never got round to it. I mean, I think I did like see it briefly because a friend had a copy and stuff, but I didn't really get to playing it. So I just thought I'd rent that out and give it a whirl. And it's pretty much what you expect, kind of fun, but not obviously up there with some of the better WarioWare games like Twisted, especially. Probably.
I think Twisted is probably the best. Overall.
Yeah, Twisted's really good. Just fantastic, just so perfect for a handheld game. Really
see,
wonderful.
I gotta pick that up.
This is good. You know, I mean, obviously because you've got all the different sort of applications of the Wii Remote, it's kind of fun and silly. And I do kind of wish the multiplayer was more robust because then I might have been more inclined to buy it. Because I could see, I could see myself using it with other people down the line. You know, with a fairly inadequate multiplayer, especially with like now we're in the world of Brawl, which obviously is always going to dominate. You know, it really would have to be something a lot more significant to kind of demand like a lot of playtime down the line. So, I thought just rent it, see what it, you know, get some of those sort of cool retro Nintendo references in the. In the 9-volt and 18-volt games, which are always funny.
I mean, the one thing...
John, what were you about to say?
Well, the one thing I will say about Smooth Moves is that what I like about it is it's really good for kids or people that don't really want to play in a competitive kind of game like Brawl, or they don't want to learn any moves or anything like that. I mean, I know me and my girlfriend have had a lot of fun with Smooth Moves because, you know, it's just funny and silly and, you know, you just do stupid things with the controller, so... I think it's really good in terms of just being a kind of a non-threatening multiplayer game.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah, what I was going to say, I'm with Greg on the multiplayer stuff because I think the number of multiplayer modes is pretty thin, and they're not really implemented all that well. Like the Icarus mode, where everybody's like an angel and you're flying around, and that's like single elimination. And so it tends to be over really quickly, especially if you're with a group that doesn't know the game very well. And, you know, why can't I have the option to increase that to, like, double or triple elimination?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's a button. That is one button on the menu for me to flip that, and then I can adjust it and we'll have more fun. But the game is just, I don't know, it's so antithetical to the philosophy of the game. It's just like, here are these things and you're going to do them. I don't know. I have found that I've had groups as large as maybe 8 people playing Smooth Moves in my apartment, and my living room's not very big, and I found that the game becomes almost violent when you have that many people.
Yeah,
because people aren't paying attention, they're drinking or they're talking to each other, and suddenly you shove the controller in their face and they're like, oh, what do I have to do? They start jumping around, people get hit in the face, people are falling around. It's really funny, but I wish it gave you a little more time to pass off the controller, because I think it assumes that you're all like sitting in a circle singing Kumbaya in between the micro games.
Yeah.
And that it's really easy to just pass it over to somebody, and it's actually like hot potato. Actually, it's worse than hot potato. And it gets faster and faster, of course. But to me, the speed should be related to how much time you have to actually play the game and not how much time you have to pass the controller.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes dependent a lot on the person who went before you.
Sure.
And sometimes they give you the controller after the game has already started, and you have no idea what's going on. The other thing I have a problem with is I feel like you should be able to turn off certain sets of games, like certain gestures, because the thing like the remote control where it's actually using the pointer, the sensor bar, that doesn't work if you're off to the side.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And because this is a game where you're passing the controller all over the place, people will be doing exactly what it shows on the screen, and it doesn't work because they're not standing in the right place. And that is so against the philosophy of Wii.
Absolutely.
You know,
and you'd think
you're supposed to do the motion, and it just works.
And you think because it's all kind of delineated by those so-called forms that would be something that's fairly easy to do and almost natural. You know, you've got the different sets of games in the one-player mode, and then you just think in multiplayer you could do a similar thing where you just pick a certain set that, you know, would have a certain number of forms within it that's sort of suitable for the party of people that you're using. So I just think it's a general irony because I didn't own it, but isn't the one for the GameCube basically just turning the GBA one into a multiplayer game?
Right, yeah. And actually the GameCube version has much better multiplayer.
Yeah, well,
options
it pretty
than
much
the
is
game.
Just a beyond, you know, especially if you were someone who had.
It's a GBA port to GameCube, and they added like a very simple interface.
And then it's just a case of, well, what can you do, you know, with on a console better than you can the handheld? Well, multiplayer. So it was quite, you know, multiplayer focused, especially if you hadn't. If you had played the GBA game, because that obviously
absolutely.
That's the only additional value. Whereas here, it's very kind of cursory, the multiplayer element.
And actually, the other weird thing is you have to play all the way through the single player game to unlock multiplayer.
That's right, you do.
At all.
That also is very curious.
It's crazy.
Especially.
I think the design of the game, especially in terms of multiplayer, is kind of befuddling. I mean. It's pretty bad.
It's just odd.
Considering
just odd.
That it's a party game. It's like Mario Party. It's a game that you buy to play with other people. And either you're going to take turns working through the single-player game, which takes 2 or 3 hours at least, or they're going to sit there and watch you, or they're going to leave and come back in a few days until, you know, when you've done that. But it's pretty crazy. And then once you finally unlock multiplayer, there's like two modes.
Yeah,
and neither one of
it's all that very, very insubstantial. Just I don't know whether it's related to the fact that it wasn't it like a launch title in Japan or something. It was very early.
It was. I think it was.
So
rushed.
I guess it was rushed. But you just some of that stuff, like you said, is just it's so easy. I don't see how it's time dependent to implement some of that functionality in there. You know, so
it's also the way Nintendo works. They don't like to give you lots of multiplayer options and customization.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why Brawl is so kind of outstanding in that regard, is that, you know, it does within the more solid boundaries of what Nintendo, you know, obviously stuff like voice chat and all that, there's pretty much no breaking that wall down yet, but everything else, you know, in terms of, you know, button mapping and all the different things you could, I mean, it's pretty comprehensive, so that's what that, I guess we could be pleased with that. But I mean, so that's why I'm renting it. Really, I was aware of these things, and that's why I hadn't bought it previously because I do like the WarioWare games a great deal. But I just thought it'd be nice to finally play it and just see what it was like without having to, you know, spend a lot of money on something I'm not going to use in the longer term. And other than
I got WarioWare for my birthday about a year ago, and it was a late birthday present from a friend, and I've had a lot of fun with it when I brought it out, but it's not a game that I bring out all that often. For one thing, I don't often have enough people over here to make it worthwhile. But even when I do, usually it's something we play for about 15 minutes, and people have a good laugh out of it, but there's just not much to it.
Yeah.
And also, usually about half the group will get frustrated with it right off the bat because, you know, certain things don't work, or they miss their turn because somebody didn't know what name they were under. You know, the game only will hold like 10 names for multiplayer, and so every time you go in there with a new group, you have to delete a bunch of ones so you can input the new people's, or else they're playing under someone else's name, which is very confusing. So anyway, it's a fun game, and I've had good times with it, but I'm glad I didn't pay for it myself.
Yeah, sure. But it's filling the gap with Brawl a little bit. I've been finishing off Layton recently, and pretty close to the end, I think. I've solved like 100 puzzles or something, and story-wise, it's pretty obvious I'm coming near the end. And it's been what I expected. It is a nice handheld game in the sense that you can sort of quote unquote play it doing other things. You know, doesn't sort of demand all of your attention, and certainly in terms of looking at the screen. A lot of the time, you may just look at the screen, and then one could just think about the actual logic puzzle in front of you without really, you know, particularly focusing on the system itself at all. So it's nice in that regard. And I think it's generally, you know, I'm pleased that, I mean, the voice acting is not is not good, obviously. Yeah, I mean, like with Leighton.
Do you want to give us your impression?
No, I dare not. I can't. Yours is too good for a start. That's just really shocking. But you imagine though, you know,
if
however, you know, sort of appalling it may sound to your ears, imagine how it sounds to mine.
Yeah. I'm sure this is like it's the equivalent for me of Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, that is bad, isn't it, actually?
I cannot watch that movie because her southern accent is atrocious.
Total aside,
it is atrocious, I can assure you.
Isn't Silence of the Lambs, like, really hammy? I mean, isn't that just vastly overrated film? I mean, if you go a bit of Chilling and all that, where, like, you know, Anthony Hopkins is sort of mincing about, like, some sort of pantomime version of Hal from 2001.
Well, I mean, I think he's hilarious.
Oh, he is.
I think he's by far the best part
of
the movie.
But there's nothing chilling
about that.
The rest of
the movie is really quite bad.
It's nothing chilling about that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the movie. I saw it right before Hannibal came out, I think. I was like, wow, this is a famous movie. I've never seen it. So I borrowed it from someone, and I was not impressed by it. I actually think Hannibal, the great thing about which is the sequel, is that it makes no claims to be like a serious detective movie or anything
that.
It's just, it's the thrill of watching Hannibal do sick shit to innocent people. And it's just like 2 hours of him going around slashing people and eating their brains and stuff. And it's like, you know, it just kind of sheds the pretense and gets right down to the meat of it. But I think it kind of shows Silence of the Lambs to be pretty lame.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, we went from Professor Layton to Silence of the Lambs.
That's how harrowing it is.
Might be a new high point for this show.
But I appreciate the effort on the production value side, is the point. And obviously, it didn't necessarily pay off in the voice acting, especially, but in general, you know, because you could say, well, you know, it's just logic puzzles, and just give me the puzzles and all that. But I don't know, even though I didn't particularly care for the voice acting or the plot, essentially, the artwork was nice. And I just think it's more engaging that way, even probably more to a greater extent for other people, perhaps, than myself. But I think it was worth it, and hopefully they can build on that in the next games, which presumably will come out over in Western territories, and perhaps recast some people, especially Leighton's apprentice. He is awful.
There are two more Professor Layton games in Japan
There's,
it's like Phoenix Wright. Japan is way ahead of us, and
that's right.
We're catching up.
And the last thing,
but I Layton actually did very well in the NPDs for February.
Yeah,
so
it did.
I have a feeling that they'll probably be. I think it sold like nearly 200,000 copies, which is kind of insane. It sold more than Advance Wars.
Yeah, Advance Wars was not a huge triumph. I don't think. But yeah, I think we can safely rest assured that there will be further Layton games coming west, and hopefully they will sort of solidify it up a bit, perhaps with some of the feedback they've got, I don't know. And the one other thing I've been playing this week was DK Jungle Climber for the DS, which I got fairly cheap. Just sort of thought, oh, that's supposed to be quite good. I think I remember Aaron gave it quite a positive review for the site.
TYP likes those games too.
I didn't play the GBA one. I was kind of intrigued by it, and sort of had opportunities to get it, and I didn't. But this one is actually, I was a little surprised by how much fun I've had with it, actually, how good it seems to be. It's more creative than I thought. I mean, I knew about the whole, you know, left and right shoulder buttons things and all the rest of it, and I just assumed that would kind of be like the whole game, in terms of like, well, the control system's a bit weird, so that's kind of going to be the hook of the game. And the
gimmick,
the level design and things I wasn't expecting a whole lot from, but there's some interesting things going on there. They do have some certain amounts of imagination. It's actually quite a lot harder than I thought. You know, they don't just give you this sort of odd control scheme and say, well, that's kind of weird to get used to and that's it. They give you difficult scenarios to work within that control scheme, and that just it there's something really satisfying about pulling something off with something sort of so foreign. Yeah, when you actually get something right, you gotta do some maneuver where you sort of, you know, hook yourself off one peg and onto another, and then, you know, shoot this thing and do it in a sort of tight frame of time. it just feels nice. It's like there's a greater sense of accomplishment with a control scheme that you haven't sort of played essentially in a million other games before. So, yeah.
By the way, that game is from the same developer as DK Barrel Blast.
Yes, yes, it is, and that is apparently.
Maybe they should stick to handheld.
It seems that way, doesn't it? Because that is. Although, I mean, I guess part of the problem with that is like it was supposed to be a Bongo game, and then it wasn't, and I don't know how much that kind of soiled it as well.
It would not have been good, even.
I'm sure it wouldn't have been good, but
really.
That.
I mean, the Wii controls are horrific, but it's just not a. It's not a good game. It's
yeah.
not. It's not a very interesting
sure.
game.
There's so many trophies for it in Brawl that I was like, that actually came out? I was kind of surprised.
DK Barrel Blast is like the inbred child of Mario Kart and Diddy Kong Racing. It has like half the intelligence of either of its parents. Yeah, it's a total mess.
Yeah, that did not
It's like the
well.
Easiest $20 of trade-in credit I ever made, though. It took like 3 hours to review it.
Harsh. Yeah, that's kind of because I mean this is really there's some interesting use of the two screens as well. Like there's one thing that made me laugh where you're climbing in fog, so you can't actually see where you're going. But like what you have, but that's on the tops. Normally they span both greens, like you know. So you've got quite a lot of real estate, and you know I didn't play the GBA game, so I don't know how well it worked. But yeah, you know, I would have thought just the vertical orientation would be sort of better, really, because of the nature of the game. You know, you are climbing a lot of the time, as the title would suggest. But in this situation, it's all foggy, and you can't really see where you're going. But you have a map on the lower screen, which tells you where certain things are. So you sort of have to layer the two over in your head, sort of look at the two and sort of put them together to know where to go, and then sort of climb through. And actually, sort of cute little thing, like Donkey Kong's got Diddy on his back, who's actually looking at the map that's on the lower screen as you climb. So I thought that was a cute little touch. Just it's just a bit more creative and a bit more challenging than I was expecting, and it's a good game. I was quite surprised.
Cool. And by the way, the GBA game is called Donkey Kong King of Swing.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you're interested, you can probably find the GBA one for really cheap. So anyway, that's the name, and then the DS one is Jungle Climber, probably less cheap, but a little better, I would bet. Okay, my turn for new business, and I'll try to be brisk here because we're running pretty long already. But we'll start with Guitar Hero 3. I got my disc back today.
Finally.
No, I cannot really hear a difference. It's nice to have it back at least. I thought I would read quickly this little note that they packed in. You guys might get a kick out of it. I don't know. It says it's from Activision. Wow, they wrote me. It says, Guitar Hero 3 Legends of Rock Wii Disc Replacement. Dear valued Activision/Red Octane customer. Enclosed is your Guitar Hero 3 Legends of Rock Wii replacement disc. We sincerely thank you for your patience and understanding. You are welcome. Please be advised that this remastered disc should correct the audio issues you may have experienced. If you have any questions or need any additional support, don't hesitate to contact Activision customer support at this
because we'll get right on it for you.
Yeah, like 3 months later. Once again, thank you for supporting Guitar Hero. Now, the interesting thing about this, I think, is that I like the last sentence. Once again, thank you for supporting Guitar Hero. Like it's a charity. Like that's what I would expect to hear from the blood donation bank,
yeah.
You know? Supporting Guitar Hero. I don't know. I just thought that was funny. But let's see. I played a good bit of Brawl this week. Actually, today I went on an unlocking binge, and going off the challenge board, I decided, okay, I need to play like 10 brawls with Captain Falcon on this stage, and I ended up unlocking like 5 stages in the span of about 30 minutes. So that was exciting, including the Electroplankton stage, which I had forgotten was ever even confirmed to be in the game. So I got in there and I was like, what the hell is this? And the event to unlock it wants you to like turn all these leaves red, but it's not clear how you do that. And,
yeah.
And then there's these things bouncing around, making noises when they hit the leaves, and you can't control them. And I'm sure it all makes more sense if you've actually played Electroplankton, but I was like, what is going on? It took me like 10 minutes to finish it.
I had to look up what the hell it was referencing too. I was like, I can't believe I don't know what this is supposed to be.
Well, I knew it was from electroplankton, but I didn't understand what I was supposed to do or what was going on. It was really strange. And also, it's hard to tell what in the background you can stand on and what you can't, because it's all 2D.
Yeah, and you can't swim in the water on that stage either. Like all the other stages with water, you just fall right through it, which killed me several times. Good.
Yeah, so anyway, I've only played it once, but it's a weird level for sure. Let's see. I've played a little bit of Magic Online.
Oh.
There was a new set that came out, and I made some lucrative trades and re-upped my decks. That's all I'll say about that.
Now, I will say, in your defense, I am considering getting into... I have Eye of Judgment on the PS3, which is kind of like that, and I'm considering getting into it. I am intrigued.
I've heard it's very much.
I am intrigued, Johnny. I'll say no more.
Are you still playing?
I hope you do it. I look forward to hearing what you think about it. Actually,
are you still playing Eye of Judgment?
I've actually never played it. I have it all set up to go, but I've never played it. I mean, there's so many other PS3 games that I have to play. So
yeah, it's gotten cheaper on Amazon, so I've been thinking about picking it up.
Yeah,
we may have to play each other if I do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, speaking of owning games that you haven't played, in the past couple days, it's dawned on me how many virtual console games I've downloaded and barely touched. And I don't know about you guys. Maybe this is a topic we could get into at some point. But my habits on the virtual console are really bad. I'll dump a lot of money into downloading games, and I'll play them long enough to write a paragraph for the website, and then I never play it again, even though I like the game. So I'm thinking about, once the newness of Brawl wears off and I can kind of go a few days without messing with it, I'm thinking about basically declaring a moratorium on all non-virtual console games and spending a whole week just finishing, or at least playing in a significant manner, some of these games that I've already paid for that are just sitting on my SD card. And there's a lot. I think I've probably, you know, I bet I've got 40 or 50 virtual console games.
Yeah, so do I. I mean,
it's kind of scary.
The ones that'll take forever for me to beat are the N64 games will take, I don't know, they may never get beaten. You know, at least with the NES and the SNES ones, I can kind of whittle away at them, you know, when I have like a spare half hour here and there. But the N64 ones, I mean, first off, you know, as I've ranted about before, I've had to pretty much move all of them onto my SD card, because especially when I got Smash, I had to move over Ocarina of Time, because I needed 128 blocks for Smash, and I didn't have that, so...
Wow.
Ocarina of Time. So right now on my SD card I have Ocarina of Time, Paper Mario, and Sin and Punishment, a couple other things. So
Paper Mario is a 20-hour game at least.
Yeah, meaty.
But it's good.
Oh, definitely.
When Smash came out, I cleared off 1,000 blocks from my Wii.
Wow.
I took so much crap off, and I finally took off stuff like Everybody Votes and Check Me Out, because I never use them.
Yeah.
They're just on there. And the Weather Channel and shit like that, and they're all on the front page. Like, I had this grand scheme where I wanted to fill up the first page of channels with all the, like, Nintendo channels, and then I had, like, 4 slots left at the bottom, and I put, like, the best virtual console games there, or the ones that I was playing currently. And then the other pages were just kind of categorized by system. And I finally realized that, you know, I don't need to have Sin and Punishment on here, because I haven't played it in 2 months, even though I love it. I mean, I played it many times on my old N64. So when I get ready to play that again, I will pull it off the card. For now, it doesn't need to be on there. And so I ended up moving so much stuff over to the card that I have everything on the front page now, which is pretty
crazy. Yeah, I should probably move a lot of stuff over.
I'm ready for the Mario Kart Wii channel.
I know we've said this a ton, but I just have to reiterate how ridiculous it is that we're even having this conversation.
I agree.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous.
It's pretty bad. One other thing I'll say is that this past weekend, actually Saturday night, I went to see Jason Ricci play at my local venue. Actually, it's like a block down the street from me. And that was really fun. I took a lot of friends. And my friend Kevin, who I mention every now and then, he has a Wii, he's a gamer too, and he listens to the show. He leaned over to me about halfway through the concert, and he said, "All these songs make me remind me of your podcast." That's all he could think about. So anyway, it was an amazing show. It was like $5 cover, and he played for 3 hours, and he would have played for four, but the venue cut him off because they're dicks. So, yeah, I'm actually, one thing I'd like to do is start like giving a little tour update, not with anything really specific, but just maybe at the end of the show say, okay, well, he's going to be in this state on this week, and you know, he's going to be swinging through this part of the country next month. I think people should go out and see this. I mean, if you're a fan of the podcast, you'll be familiar with some of the songs, and you'll really, really enjoy it. I've never taken anyone, I've probably taken dozens and dozens of people to see this guy, and not a single one of them's ever been disappointed. So it was a sweet show, and I'm still recovering a little bit, actually. It was a rough weekend. So anyway, that's my new business, and we are in dire need of a break. So we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, we are back and well-rested, and I have a delicious bottle of blueberry kefir in front of me. It's very good for your digestive system, and it tastes good. So that means we are good and regular and ready for reader mail, which we have not done with any regularity whatsoever. Hey, how's that? It's been like 2 or 3 weeks since we did any reader mail, and it's been piling up in the box, and so I went through and selected the cream of the crop. And here it is, and we're going to take turns reading these, and then we'll all discuss them as necessary. So, Pale, I think you have the first one.
All right. So, Andrew writes, I'm a longtime listener of Radio Free Nintendo and a big fan of the site. My question is this. Seeing as how rare was a second party under Nintendo during the time that they developed some games and created some them specifically for the Nintendo 64, are they allowed to take projects such as GoldenEye over to another platform without the consent of Nintendo?
No.
No, they're GoldenEye, not. For GoldenEye, they need Nintendo's consent because Nintendo published GoldenEye.
Yeah, that's the thing. It depends because there's actually several sets of rights that are involved here, right? Like there's the rights to the characters, then there's the publishing rights. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, in this case, it's very complicated because you've got Rare, Nintendo, Microsoft, and I think Miramax owns the James Bond movies and the likenesses of those characters. So it's very complicated. And GoldenEye, it wouldn't surprise me if you never see it on any digital distribution, whether XBLA or Virtual Console, because it's just a licensing nightmare. But then, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is on Virtual Console and XBLA, and even though nobody wanted it, they managed to pull that out. So, and that was like a crazy mess between, you know, like Mirage Comics, I would assume, and the movie studio, and Konami, and Ubisoft, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. So, who knows? It's not impossible, but very unlikely. Now, as for some other Rare games, it really depends on a case-by-case basis because some of those Nintendo 64 games that Rare made were published by Nintendo, like Banjo-Kazooie, I'm pretty sure it was. GoldenEye certainly was. Blast Corps, I think, was probably published by Nintendo. And as the generation went on, Rare became a little more independent, and they started to self-finance their games, basically. They were publishing their own games, and Nintendo was only distributing them. So, like, Perfect Dark was published by Rare, so they retained the rights to it, which means that the rights for Perfect Dark were transferred over to Microsoft. So Perfect Dark is much more likely to be ported, I guess you would say, to Xbox Live Arcade, and therefore less likely to become to come out on Virtual Console because Microsoft wouldn't really want to do that when they have a competing service that could run it just as well.
Yeah, and I mean they're already making like games in that series, so it's kind of their property now.
Right, yeah. Whereas like Banjo-Kazooie, Rare owns the character rights to it because they created that character. It's not like Diddy Kong. Rare can't really do anything with that because the character is, although Rare created it, it was, you know, like derived from Donkey Kong, which is a Nintendo character.
Yeah.
And so I don't think there's anything Rare can do with that now. But Banjo-Kazooie was an original character of theirs, and they certainly own the rights to the character. I don't believe they own the rights to the original game unless they somehow reverted back to them. I mean, this is getting all into like really nitpicky legal stuff.
Sure.
And part of the problem is we just don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of the right holders and things like that are not really public knowledge. It's the kind of stuff that you'd probably have to issue subpoenas to find out, as far as I know. It's fairly difficult to discover. And they don't really want to talk about it because that might clue you in on some of their plans or whatever. And Nintendo's not going to talk about it because they don't talk about anything. Nintendo doesn't answer questions from the media or from the fans. So it's very hard to say.
I think
it's very complicated.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think a lot of the reasonable people just want to say, well, why can't they just let them both come out on, you know, have GoldenEye come out on both, you know, the Virtual Console and Xbox Live Arcade? And I just think, I have a feeling even if the minds behind the games wanted it to happen, the lawyers behind the companies would still never let it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to who has the rights to what, and that's kind of changed. I mean, like Johnny said, it's like, it depends, like with at least the DK64 characters and all those kind of things. I mean, those are cases where Rare basically said, okay, here are these characters we've created. We are going to sell them to you, Nintendo. You now own them and can do whatever you want with those characters. And that didn't happen in all cases, so it's just pretty much a legal mess.
Yeah. Okay, ding ding, next question.
All right, the next question is from The Fleece, and The Fleece writes, GamePro says that vocals and drums should be added to Guitar Hero to stay competitive. How can Guitar Hero, aside from having different songs, be any different from Rock Band or whatever other game will come along the reins of instrumental rhythm sim games? I've been wondering, is it possible to play Rock Band alone by singing and playing the guitar at the same time, a la Bob Dylan or similar? That sort of option would be interesting for further diversity in the genre. Also, I'm wondering if anyone's heard if the new Guitar Hero game, based on Aerosmith, will include a harmonica peripheral, Johnny, since blues are embedded in the early style. Also, I bet I could beat Johnny at Harmonica Hero if it ever came out, just because.
No, it just says because.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's what he means.
He couldn't figure out what to put there because there's nothing he could put there.
That was when Johnny broke into his house.
And just stood over his bed and started doing a crazy harmonica solo. Then walked out of the
room. Point by point here, it is possible to sing and play guitar at the same time in Rock Band if you have like a microphone stand.
Yes, it is.
There's not a microphone stand included in the game, but the microphone they give you is shaped exactly like a normal stage mic, although it's USB. So if you have a mic stand or if you want to go out and buy one for $10 at a music store, you can just pop it in there. It's just it's a holder. There's nothing to it. Or you can always like duct tape it to your chest or whatever. Make a microphone hat. I mean, whatever you want to do. You can certainly do that. It's very difficult. I know Chris Kohler tried it when he first got Rock Band, and he was saying that it was very, very difficult, and he could really only pull it off decently on the songs that he knew really by heart. You know, like what you need is to kind of know the pitch in your head for the singing and know the words, or at least know the words well enough that it doesn't matter. Because, you know, it doesn't really recognize the words. It's really just paying attention to the pitch. Mm-hmm. But if you want to sound good, you want to say the words. So if you have an audience, it needs to be a song that you can already sing pretty well, because it's more likely that you're going to have to pay attention to the guitar. You're not likely to memorize the guitar mapping and then pay attention to the words, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's tricky, but it's possible. But by the same measure, you could play the drums and sing at the same time if you want to get all Don Henley or whatever. It's possible. It's very tricky. But I don't know. The part about Aerosmith, Steven Tyler is not really a good harmonica player, and they have really very few songs, like probably even less than the Rolling Stones, that have harmonica in them as far as I know. So, no, that's definitely not happening. Yeah. Now, if they did a Bob Dylan Guitar Hero, which they never, ever, ever will, although it would be sweet.
Thank God.
Yeah, if they did, that would be a much better candidate for a harmonica peripheral. But it's not happening either. I don't know, they just put Grateful Dead in Rock Band, so... that's a step in the right direction, you know?
Yeah, I thought about you when I saw that, Johnny. I'm like, Johnny would just love that, because I know you love Grateful Dead.
I'm not a huge Dead fan, but I like them. They're better than a lot of shit that's in Rock Band, you know?
Yeah. I agree. I really don't understand how the heck they select some of the songs for Rock Band. I'm like, is this the best you could do? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Who's paying you?
Well, anyway, I guess the meat of the question, though, is how can Guitar Hero differentiate itself from Rock Band or keep itself from being, like, totally consumed and totally outclassed? And
well, I think it has to match Rock Band, first off.
Mm.
In terms of what?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think Guitar Hero is kind of the elitist sort of, ooh, it's so much harder than Rock Band. If you're a real Guitar Hero-ish kind of player, you play Guitar Hero and not Rock Band kind of thing. But I think in terms of just like an entertainment package, it has to get the drums in there, has to get the, lost my train of thought. Somebody save me.
Well, the microphone.
Microphone.
The bass.
Yeah, all the instruments. It has to get all the instruments in there. But I mean, in terms of surpassing Rock Band, that's what, I don't know. That's open to discussion for me.
I don't know. I mean, with this Aerosmith thing that they're experimenting with, I guess, it seems like what they're trying to do to differentiate, like, not so much from Rock Band necessarily, just differentiate their releases, is like try and give some sort of unifying theme, or maybe, like, I don't know, like, is it like supposed to be like mapping out Aerosmith's career or something?
Like, I think they're taking the wrong.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If that's their idea to do it, like, kind of like, oh, well, you know, this isn't just a collection of songs and you play them. It's like there's some sort of like a, I hesitate to say story, but you know what I mean? Like some sort of content that you play through rather than just a book.
Yeah.
That to me is,
you know,
not going to cut it.
If they did a Guitar Hero 70s edition, I'd be all over that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are my favorite songs in the Guitar Hero games, are the older ones, because mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff I'm into. I think breaking it down by a time period or a genre or something like that makes so much more sense than doing band-specific versions.
Yeah, that
unless that's a disaster.
I'd love to see them do an all Zeppelin one. That'd be great. But that's about it.
Zeppelin would work, but it's not going to happen.
No,
yeah,
so.
But I mean, and again, you can only do that with a band that huge.
Yeah, or the Beatles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles would be better for Rock Band than Guitar Hero, but,
yeah.
You know, you could still do it. But, yeah, the reason it would work for Zeppelin is, like a friend told me in high school once, the reason he loved Zeppelin so much and he thought they were incredible is that every single one of their songs sounds totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. If the more you think about it, the more you realize that that's actually true, and that's probably a big reason why they're still popular today. But not many bands can say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and Aerosmith certainly cannot say that.
Yeah.
So,
it's kind of like, I don't know, you wonder whether they had the idea of having a more, you know, sort of diverse kind of legitimately sort of legendary band, and basically Aerosmith is what they could get. I don't know.
It seems like they settled for Aerosmith. I don't know. I realize there are people who love Aerosmith. I have a couple friends who are big fans. I really cannot stand them. Other than Dream On, which they've already put up for free downloading Guitar Hero 3 on the 360 and PS3. That's actually the only song I would have cared about to play in the Guitar Hero Aerosmith game. So, I don't know. That's pretty funny to me that they put their best song for free. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay, I've got the next one. It's from Adolf Vega, and caution, profanity incoming. This is how it starts. Fuck it. Fuck Star Fox, let the franchise die. Just make Sin and Punishment the main rail shooter of choice. Anime style would attract a new audience, and it could be a cool and hip hardcore game. I can already imagine how the controls would work flawlessly and be simple and elegant. I downloaded Sin and Punishment because of all the hype, and my friend and I sat down and beat the game maybe 5 hours in the first sitting. It was that intense and fun, and better than any Star Fox in the last 10 years. Well, yeah, I think that's pretty much inarguable that it'd be any in the last 10 years, considering 2008.
Yeah, because Star Fox 64 came out in 1997.
Exactly. So but my
everything is better than Star Fox in the past 10 years.
Indeed. But, I mean, my first thought would be, you know, can't we have both, really? You know, can't they get along? In terms of, you know, we had Star Fox 64 and Sin and Punishment, admittedly, some years apart, but... You know, I was happy with playing both. I don't think it has to be one killing the other or survival of the fittest or anything like that. But
well, I understand why he brings these two up together, because they, especially on the N64, they are a lot alike.
Oh, they certainly are. They certainly are. Yeah. But I mean, I just think I'd be quite happy to have multiple games that are similar in that way, because there aren't a great many of them these days. So, I mean, in that sense, I don't really feel the need to. I mean, I guess if you're saying if I had to choose one or the other, I probably would go with the successor to Sin and Punishment in many ways, because it is it's dearer to my heart as a game than Star Fox 64. And also, it's just, I think the potential with the Wii Remote and Nunchuk could really bring that game to life. You know, in some ways it would be kind of like the game they were trying to make, because steering the analog stick around to shoot like that is not ideal. It is a bit unwieldy. Mm-hmm. And I just think if that element of the game could be point and shoot, think about how much more intense you could actually make it. Because if you can reasonably expect the player to be able to shoot down far more targets because they could just go bang, bang, you know, point and shoot and all the rest of it, then you could say, well, let's just throw the kitchen sink at them. And it could totally amp up, and also it would be. I could see it more easily how you could really progress that game to a sort of an even superior version of the original with the Wii Remote and Nunchuk. I mean, I imagine you could do a similar thing with Star Fox. It just doesn't hit me as quickly.
I think Star Fox works better on a normal controller, whereas Sin and Punishment is almost too ambitious for the N64 controller, and it's. Even too ambitious for the classic controller. It's just confusing the way it's mapped out.
Yeah, certainly.
So I'm with you there. Although I do think it's a little ironic that he thinks Sin and Punishment could like be the savior sort of this kind of game, because a lot of people feel that a large chunk of the problem of the Star Fox series is that it sort of took its story too seriously and the story got too crazy and too involved. And the story is very involved in Sin and Punishment, and it's totally insane.
It is.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
It's completely impenetrable. What the hell's going on in that?
It's like, who are these characters? What are they talking about? Why did that guy just transform? What's going on? Completely insane. I mean, story-wise, it's really not any better than Star Fox.
Well,
it's not
neither better nor worse. It's just kind of, it is. It purely seems to be like, well, look, it's just any old, you know, conceit to have madness go on. You know, it's such an insane game, the amount of crazy crap that just flies at you or whatever else. The story has to be sort of reflexive enough to accommodate that, and obviously it's just a mess as a result of fudge.
Well, I was just thinking how cool it would be to have a mashup. If you could have Star Fox and Sin and Punishment be combined and merged as series, they would work so well together. You know, everybody, I think, agrees that the best level in Sin and Punishment is when you're flying around on the platform around the naval ship.
The Armada.
What if you replace that platform with an R-Wing? And you could even have a co-op mode where one person's controlling the ship and the other person is controlling the guy with the gun who's standing on the wing of the ship.
Yeah.
There's even precedent for that in Star Fox, where you have people standing on the wings. You see that in like Battlefield on the PC. You can stand on the wing and get flown around and shoot people from the wing. I think that would be pretty sweet, but that's probably too ambitious for these guys.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I will say in Star Fox's defense is that they haven't had Treasure making any of those Star Fox games. So, that's kind of the reason why Sin and Punishment is so good.
I mean, I just don't, because, I mean, obviously the first one was developed by Argonaut to a large extent, wasn't it? The British people.
Well, maybe 50%.
Yeah, but then the next one, Nintendo did it by themselves entirely, internally with EAD, didn't they?
You mean Star Fox 2?
Star Fox 64, the next one actually came out.
Yeah, Star Fox 2 still had Argonaut.
Yeah, that did, and it didn't come out. And it was quite different with all range, but 64 was all internal, right?
Yeah, and it turned out just fine.
See, that's the thing. I can't see them ever doing that again. I just can't see Nintendo devoting their internal development. At least it would be some sort of sub-tier internal team that would handle. You know, they're just their focus.
I think
now.
Star Fox is like, who can we farm this out to that will do the best job?
Yeah.
And hell, Treasure.
Exactly. If you're going to farm it out to them. I mean, they could certainly do it justice.
Haven't there been hints that Q Games is doing another one for DS?
There were hints
of that. I mean, they're certainly pretty busy with Pixel Junk stuff right now.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, as they've been around promoting Pixel Junk on pretty much every media outlet I've seen, they actually mentioned that they're definitely working with Nintendo on a DS title. They haven't mentioned Wii. They said they are cooperating with Nintendo on something for the DS again, but nothing on Wii that they've divulged anyway.
You know, actually, they did a couple of the I'm blanking now. The little GBA games, like the little pixely things.
They did one of those. They did DigiDrive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, I thought they did two. It would be really cool if Nintendo commissioned them to do a compilation of those for DS.
Yeah, they may have done more than one, but I think most of them were done by Skip. And then one or two was done by Q. DigiDrive was definitely the one that Q did, and I've got that, and that's a really interesting game, actually. It's obviously a puzzle game, but it's very different from your sort of average falling block thing, and it's quite hypnotic, and that would be nice if that came out in another form with some other content, preferably, I suppose.
I think the Orbital one was the one that interested me the most.
Yeah, I had that. That was good. Very good.
Yeah. But I think it would be awesome if they could just do a compilation of those. Anyway, that's wishful thinking again.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next letter, and I've got this one. Ryan writes, with EA's recent bid for Take-Two, I got to thinking about all the mergers we've seen over the past several years. Sega Sammy, Namco Bandai, and Square Enix, to name a few. Could Nintendo go down that road? Hypothetically, if Nintendo were to join forces with another publisher, who do you think would be the best or most likely candidate? Personally, I wouldn't mind seeing Capcom's franchises entirely exclusive to Nintendo. Mature stuff, yada yada, but unlikely because Capcom does good business on all the platforms. I don't know, what do you guys think? Mergers?
Doesn't seem that likely. I mean, Nintendo have only ever demonstrated the sort of desire to acquire sort of up-and-coming development talent rather than sort of any sort of mergers and acquisitions kind of high-level stuff. And, of course, now that they're, the second-largest valuation company in Japan, I don't really see anybody...
After one
of the car giants, isn't it?
Toyota.
I don't see anybody forcing a merger with them, so it doesn't seem especially likely.
I mean, nobody is going to merge with Nintendo. It's a question of who Nintendo might want to buy.
Yeah, and I don't really see that their acquisitions seem to be kind of like developer portfolio based rather than more like corporate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think from Nintendo's point of view, if you think about their corporate culture, buying another publisher would cause so many problems with trying to convert the other company into their way of doing business, and I just don't see what they would have to gain, really. I think they're much better off working closely with companies and trying to secure exclusives. And the funny thing is they're almost doing that by default now because of the design of their hardware.
Yes.
And so all they have to do is create a unique hardware platform, sell it to the largest number of people, and they basically get exclusives automatically because all the publishers and developers want to create games for Wii, and their Wii games don't really work on other systems. So they pretty much have to be exclusives automatically. I think that's Nintendo's way of going about this problem rather than buying up other companies. You know, the last company that Nintendo bought was Monolith Soft. And we still don't really know what that's all about. They have a DS game that's coming out in Japan very soon called Soma Bringer, which is some kind of action RPG with very nice sort of cel-shaded graphics. I don't know a whole lot about it other than that, but Monolith Soft also, they were making Disaster Day of Crisis for Wii. We haven't seen anything about it in ages. No telling. But I thought that was a strange acquisition on Nintendo's part, but probably they wanted more RPGs and they thought these guys would be good for it. And before that, I think their last acquisition was Retro Studios like 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
6 or 7 years ago at least. So they've really slowed down on that pattern of business. In fact, they've sold off more companies than they've bought in the past 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, and they really haven't made any mistakes doing that either. I mean, really. I mean, they got rid of Rare, and what has Rare really done for Microsoft? Not a heck of a lot.
Yeah. They got rid of Left Field, and they went on to make Nitro Bike.
For Nintendo.
So
it's like they get rid of them, and then they still get their games. You know? It's like, yeah,
I think,
get out of here.
I think they've done pretty well for themselves in this field.
Mm-hmm. I do think part of Ryan's questions was that he wanted to hear just some of our fan dreams as well. And while I agree with you, all you guys, about how unlikely it is, I just wanted to throw out there that I would love it if Nintendo got in bed with Square.
Well, they sort of did, you know, the game developers company or whatever, game developer studio, that thing, you know, I don't even know if it exists anymore. It was basically like a tax shelter kind of deal that Yamauchi did, and, you know, it's back when they created that thing for Square so that they would be able to make games for Nintendo even though they were partially owned by Sony or something like that.
All I know is
I'm still not throwing out my own suggestions, but they sort of did that, and I don't know if it exists anymore.
Well, see, I want Kingdom Hearts 3 on Wii with Nintendo Worlds thrown in, because I'm enough of a nerd that I want Goofy and Cloud to fight against Ganondorf and Hyrule. I think it would be cool.
I mean, it seems like they almost could have done that in Smash Brothers. Like, it's a pretty simple thing to add characters and levels in Smash Brothers, and they didn't. So,
yeah,
I don't know. But I think they haven't really announced Kingdom Hearts 3, have they?
No, not at all. Just all this.
I still think it's a very good candidate for Wii, especially if you look at the momentum of Square's announcements going towards Nintendo platforms.
Yeah.
And obviously the demographic issues also. I think it's a good likelihood,
The DS title looks really nice, too. It looks like it's using the same 3D that, you know, Final Fantasy III and Crystal Chronicles that I'm playing now and all that use. And it looks really pretty for a DS game, so I'm looking
forward
to
that. The one with the crazy-ass title?
Yeah.
Yeah, 3-5
right here in the 58 half days or something?
Yeah.
God. Okay. Let's move on to the next question, and we're back around to Pale.
All right. I don't know how to say that. Wolfoss Mac writes... I went out and bought Scourge after the first time you mentioned it. Since you keep recommending it to people, if they can find it cheap, thought you might want to know that, as near as I can tell, it's $9.99 new at all GameStops right now. So,
sweet.
Nice.
Good information.
I think John and I will both recommend it for that price.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I still can't beat the last boss. I'm not going back to it now. There's no point. I don't really care to see the ending. But it's a good game. There's a lot to it for $10. Shit, yeah. Okay, next one.
Okay, Tommy writes, after hearing Johnny a few weeks ago telling us he played through Zelda Twilight Princess for the second time and not finishing it, did he feel as though a slight review revision was appropriate for his value of the game? Mario Galaxy was a wonderful counter and a return to high status for the game itself, and to its standing compared to games on different systems. The problem with exceptions is that they are rare.
Yeah, so what Tommy's referring to is he's basically suggesting that, and I had to cut out part of his email for length, but to summarize it, he felt that Twilight Princess didn't do enough to evolve the series, or it kind of just felt like more of the same, whereas Galaxy was simultaneously a return to form and also like a massive evolution of the series into something new that it hadn't done before. And he was kind of asking whether we had any ideas for Zelda to do that. I think we've already discussed that topic quite a few times on the show, so I didn't want to get back into that. But in terms of Twilight Princess, would I review it any differently having played through it again? No.
What did you score it?
Yeah,
I gave it a 10 at launch,
right.
And I think at the time I was, torn as I get over scores, between like a 9.5 and a 10, and the difference between those is so negligible that I practically flipped a coin, and so the only thing I would change it to is like maybe a 9.5,
yeah.
But that's not really a change in opinion. Mm-hmm. from the first time I played through it. That's still how I feel about it. It could go either way, and I just honestly I don't lose any sleep over half point differences.
Yeah, I mean,
even when
really to
one
me,
of them is a 10.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like the like a 9.5 versus a 10. I don't know if I've. It's hard for me to say if I've ever legitimately played a game and thought, "Wow, this is a 10 out of 10." I mean, typically I can always find, like, I would have to, for me to give a game a 10 out of 10, I would have to sit there and literally think, okay, are there any real flaws with this game? I would have to sit there and go right down, because, I mean, if there's, like, a couple of things that are kind of annoying, even the smallest things, it's a 9.5. Because that just means...
That's because you're basing 10 on basically perfection.
Yeah, see, I don't
all
really
games,
see...
All games have flaws.
Yeah,
perfection
really...
in context. Perfection in...
Perfection, period. It's not possible.
Yeah, I just don't,
I mean,
I just don't kind of get... I don't know, I just couldn't do that, you know what I mean? Some of it, if I was doing it myself, like, in that regard, I just don't think I could go through a game with a fine-tooth comb, like, to decide whether it was perfect or not as to whether I was going to give it a 10. Either I feel it would be a 10 or I wouldn't. You know, either it,
yeah,
either
it's,
it whacks
for me,
me,
it's pure intuition.
Either it whacks me sideways enough for me to say this is a 10 or it doesn't. And, I mean, probably not many games have done that for me. I mean, probably over the sort of last couple of generations, maybe just Metroid Prime and Galaxy. That's about it. The first Metroid Prime
okay. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's kind of what you would expect.
But that's not because I think they're perfect. Just yeah. You know, in the sense that, oh, that it's not as rare as that because it's for perfection. It's just it's as rare as that because that's the kind of impression that a game has to make to sort of elicit that feeling for me.
I mean, I'm...
Yeah, and when I first reviewed Twilight Princess, if you go back and read the review, I talk about issues where the sometimes swinging the controller doesn't register a sword attack, mm-hmm. And how I think I mentioned, you know, how stupid it is that they like reverse the world for Wii
yeah.
because most
that,
people
that
are right-handed.
Is, that is
that's
silly.
Totally
yeah.
ridiculous.
I mean, there's other things in that game. I mean, some of the repetition yeah, like, in the game, like the number of times you have to go through bits of the forest like that you've already been through. I just thought.
Oh yeah, sure.
Tedious.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about stuff that actually impacts your gameplay. I'm not talking about like little kind of, you know, semantic sort of things. I'm talking about, you know, stuff like where I'm like, wow, yeah, when I play the game, this kind of annoys me, kind of thing. Like even if it's ever so slight. I mean, there are games that do
I'm just
not. Have this.
I'm not sure what distinction you're drawing, John.
I guess it depends.
My theory on tens is that if the problems that I see in the game basically do nothing to diminish my enthusiasm for it, which is the case for Twilight Princess, then I ignore them. You know, I mention them, but they don't, like, drop it by a point. I don't even think in those terms, but they don't do that. And I certainly know people who do think about it in that way. But for me, I was like, you know, I mean, I still believe that Twilight Princess is an amazing game. It's absolutely gorgeous. It tells a very interesting story that, to be fair, relative to the rest of the series itself, is pretty unusual. It's very different from what you expect from that series. I think there are a lot of very interesting gameplay ideas in it. The dungeons, some of the dungeons especially, are excellent. Yeah. Even the second time through, I was really enjoying the puzzles and just trying to, you know, just to figure out where everything went and everything was exciting, even having already done it before. So... And for God's sake, it's a 50-hour game, and I played through it twice. That should tell you something about yeah. how much I like
and
it.
And I'm on my third playthrough, actually, because I played through it once on the GameCube, because a friend of mine had the GameCube version, so I thought, oh, for my second playthrough, I'll just do it that way. But now I'm playing it through on the Wii again, so I can have it in widescreen and all the rest of it. And so I certainly wouldn't quibble about its last ability, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's a utterly fantastic game. I have no regrets about the review. Like I said, I mean, the review is critical. It's a critical review. If you go in, it, you know, certainly there's a lot of enthusiasm. There's also a lot of realistic, okay, well, this is a Zelda game. You've done before. It has this control issue, this camera issue, whatever. And if you go back through all the other games I've given 10s to, which is not very many, they're all like that. I mean, I'm realistic about it. You know, I know these games aren't perfect. But that's just doesn't have anything to do with how I assign the score. And by the way, I didn't not finish it the second time because I like decided I didn't like it at the end or anything. I other games came out. I got Galaxies and actually that's about when Mario came out
yeah.
or Metroid.
Yeah, August.
It's been like 6 months now. Jeez, I really should go back and play the last 2 hours and just finish it. But I just haven't had time. I've got other games, so. All right.
I've got the next one. Yeah, it's from Kraken 613.
Is this the last one?
I think so. How do you assign the buttons on the classic controller? I can't get a good setup. For Brawl. This would be, and I can't get a good setup. I'm just wondering how you guys assign them. I got so frustrated trying to play with the classic controller, I moved my Wii so I could plug a GameCube controller in. I just want to find a good setup I like for using it before I buy three more classic controllers.
Who here is using the classic on Brawl?
I am.
I've only tried it. I went to GameCube right after.
I'm using it too. John, what's your configuration?
My configuration, I actually put some thought into this, and I kind of came back around to a near default configuration. Just because I found that I was originally setting, I think I had it kind of set to, I think I had attack set to, I had attack set to B, special set to like X, grab set to Y, and I think jump set to A or something like that. I switched it all around,
wow. And
I just didn't like that at all. It just didn't feel right because I'm so used to B being the, especially like all of the special attacks being mapped to B, and it just seemed really, really weird doing something else for that. But the way I have it mapped right now, I think the only thing I switched up was I think I changed X to grab, I think. So I have R button for grab and also X for grab, I think. And everything else, I pretty much had the defaults. I really haven't messed with it too much. And that's after a lot of experimentation.
Yeah. What I've done is also pretty simple. So the default is for X and Y to both be jump, and then B is special and A is normal attack. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I kind of rotated everything 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. So I've got jump on X and A, normal attack on B, and special attack on Y. So it's more of a Super Nintendo style platforming setup, you know, mm-hmm. where you jump with B and actually it's not. For me, I guess it felt a little more like the GameCube controller, because I know what John's saying, like as far as B doing special attacks, it's obviously that's the way it works on the WaveBird, but the button layout is so different on a classic controller. It doesn't feel anything like the GameCube button layout to me. So I just kind of found this, and I'm doing really well with it. I really doubt that I'll go to anything else. The only other change I've made is, I turned off up jumping.
Yeah, I did that as
well. I'm so glad they put that feature in.
Yeah.
And I also reassigned the, the right analog stick. I changed it from Smash Attacks because I never use it for that.
Yay, down with the stick.
I changed it to grab because one of the things that I regret in Melee is that I never really started grabbing very much, because it's kind of, you either have to use Z or you have to use R and A at the same time.
Yeah.
And neither one is very comfortable, and so I just never grabbed very often. And plus, the throws were toned down so much in Melee that, you know, they're still useful, but like they're not like in the original N64 Smash Brothers where you could basically beat the game by throwing everything with
it's
Kirby.
True.
Really, I've done it. So they toned them down so that they were a lot weaker in Melee, and so I didn't feel like I needed to use them as much. But I decided for Brawl I wanted to start grabbing more, and so I put it on the stick, and it's nice because you can just flick the stick and you've got a grab.
That's good.
And I also have L for grab, but I'm not, even back on the Super Nintendo controller, I was never very comfortable using the L button because I'm right-handed and it's up there and I don't know. I'm much more likely to use the R button than the L.
So you pretty much moved all of your face buttons over one button to the left, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So why don't either of you guys use the GameCube controller? I'm just curious.
I just don't really feel like bringing them out.
Oh.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I am. Like I don't mind bringing them out for multi, but for playing by myself, I'd prefer to use the Wii controller, and I think Classic is fine.
Yeah.
It feels fine. You know, if it didn't, I have a WaveBird plugged in even, just for when people come over. But I'm fine using the Classic. And if you ask some of the people I've played online, they'll tell you that I'm doing okay.
Oh, bravado!
Hey, the ladies, be pleased if you know what I'm saying.
So does that mean you're really good at slow motion playing, Johnny? Or have you had better luck than me?
Yeah.
No, it depends. I played with Evan. about, well, several days ago, and we played for half an hour with no lag, and then this other, somebody else, one of the readers jumped in, and it slowed down a little bit. Then I was playing my friend Josh in Mississippi a couple days ago, and that's 1,000 miles from Colorado to Mississippi, and we had no lag problems at all until his brother and another guy from his work joined, and his brother's in, I think, North Carolina now, and the other guy, I guess he's in Mississippi too, but chaining all that together, it started to really get pretty bad, yeah. And that's when I dropped out. But certainly with one or two other opponents, it seems like the geography is much less important, but once you get up to four, it becomes kind of a mess. If you're going to do four player, you might want to be in the same state or, you know, the same region.
See, I'm really just wondering why it's like that. I don't know why the lag is so bad.
Yeah, it's a little confounded.
I mean, I don't have that with 360, and I don't have that with PS3. I have zero lag, ever.
Yeah. I can't. So. Wendy and I played before North American launch, and it was like everything was perfect, but then when like certain like big flashy items came on, it would lag out a little bit, and we complained after. We're like, wow, we hope this gets better. If we only knew.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered by the lag, honestly. Most of the time, it's only in like one match out of 10 in a series that I'll play. Mm-hmm. And actually, one last thing I want to say about Smash, and then we need to wrap the show up, is that the same match when I was playing my friend in Mississippi and his brother in North Carolina, the other guy who also lives in Mississippi that I didn't know, he joined the group while I was already playing with my friend, and I didn't know who this guy was. But I was glad that he was able to join our group, even though I didn't have a friend code with him. And after we played a match on the character select screen, I saw a little box on his name, and it said friendship requested or friend code requested. And all I had to do was go over there with a hand and click A on it, and it added my friend code, and it basically automatically exchanged our friend codes. Mm. So now that we're on each other's list, and we didn't even have to type in any numbers.
That's nice.
So I had no idea that Smash would do that. It's actually a really nice feature, and I think this is probably the first Nintendo game that does anything like that.
Sure.
So it's effectively you can add friends of friends if you get into a match with them, that's pretty sweet actually. It's sort of similar to the Rivals thing that Hunters did on DS, but not quite the same. Yeah. But still really cool.
Well, yeah, I hope you're all looking forward to some really laggy games against me when I get online.
Well, you know, Greg, I bet you'll do okay with James and John.
Yeah, the
Pale.
East Coast.
They're
East
on the
Coast
East Coast.
People, yeah.
But the other reason that you're finding consistent lag in Brawl is probably because almost everybody who gets online with a Wii is using wireless.
That's what I'm wondering. I was just going to bring that up. I've considered going wired with mine.
Yeah. See, well, I mean, it, make any difference. It wouldn't help you. It wouldn't help the lag from the other person that you're playing against. Yeah. But
again, I fall back to I play my PS3 over my wireless all the time, and Warhawk runs perfectly.
Exactly.
Still don't understand how they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Nintendo. But it is, they just don't have the expertise.
It's a little virginal for them, isn't it? So maybe they'll get better at it. Yeah. I don't know. No, probably not though.
Yeah.
And Pale, you.
Yeah, I hope Mario Kart's a little better.
Yeah,
it should be. I mean, it's, you know, the netcode should be 6 months more advanced. So we'll see. I do know that, and I would assume they did the same with Brawl, but I've heard that if you go to the Nintendo Wi-Fi Connection website, you can see like the beta testers playing Mario Kart, and apparently they're doing like massive load testing, and they've been beta testing the online for Mario Kart for months. Mm. So hopefully all the kinks will be worked out. All right, well, that's going to wrap up the show for us. Thanks for listening, and obviously, we love getting the reader mail. We read a lot of it, and it gives us a lot of good topics for discussion. I think we had a good show here. So, if you have some ideas for something we ought to talk about, or you have a question for us, anything like that, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, unless you're a spammer, in which case, fuck you. let's see. Other than that, I want to thank James Jones, who I assume will be, I pray, will be editing this show for us in absentia. And I want to thank Mike for joining us today.
I hope I didn't sound like too much of a weirdo.
Mike?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, now I can, yes.
See,
we're having some late audio.
See, now that'll sound really interesting on the edited version.
Okay. All right, then. And, John, I hope you feel better, man.
Hey, man. I'm fighting the good fight over here.
Yeah. Take your vitamin C and eat your chicken soup.
I'm saying my prayers and eat my vitamins, brother.
Yeah. Flintstones. Okay. Well, anyway, I've been your host, Jonathan Metz, if I may say so in a British sort of way, since it's St. Patrick's Day. I don't know, do they allow themselves to be called British?
No, because even Northern Ireland, it's actually the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, so it's separate from Britain.
Ah, okay. Okay. But Wales is Britain,
yeah, that's
right.
That's part of Great Britain. And it is great.
Oh,
it is great.
Wales?
No, Great Britain. Britain is great.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying Wales is great. Anyway, I'm sure it is. I'll go there one day.
Take my word for it.
Okay. Anyway, hope you had a great St. Patrick's Day, and hope you're having a great St. Patrick's Day aftermath, as it were. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Later. Back late.
Is this the part where you guys just count on James to fix it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
I mean,
usually.